Now let's see if I can make this work. It seems to work. Now how about this?
Wow!
Good. I will present some poems, and they're all homemade. And this one is translated from Norwegian. I will not read it in Norwegian because most of you will not understand. Anyway, now let's see if this works. Yeah! Norway is a land rich on stones. I was promised that that sound should go away, but it's there, so you have to live with it. You know, Norway is very rich on stones. It was left by the glaciers some thousands and thousands of years ago. And imagine now. Imagine. Imagine that you were given the task to order all these stones, to put them into two piles. One pile for small stones over here, and one pile for big stones over there. Okay? It's a big job. At least in Norway, it's a big job. And you had to work for hours. But finally, after some weighing maybe, you will have two piles of stones. One consisting of but big stones, and one consisting of but small stones. And you could be happy, content, job was done. Or you could possibly feel a little unease. On behalf of all the middle-sized stones that you had forced either in the pile for big stones or in the pile for small stones. And that is the curse of dichotomy. So, with that in mind, I'll read you the first part of this keynote. It's called A Growing Plethora of Genders. For decades, I traveled the landscapes of gender, including my own. My aim was, at best, to map all diversities or gendered topography. Like most people, at least in the Western world, I started out with an old and traditional map depicting two sexes, two genders, as either-or options. Quite early in my life, I realized that that map has been used more to direct the gender landscape than to give space and guidance to those who should journey within them. I met with a youngster of 13, presenting with long blonde hair, neat makeup, girls' clothing, and a bulge in the crotch. How about that? And I asked for the name. The answer was deeply pitched and rather short, Oscar. Okay, Oscar, I said. What pronoun do you prefer? Shall I use she, he, here, ze, or some other one? The answer was almost as short as the former. He, of course. And then I said, what is your gender? Is it male, female, or?
I am Oscar, Oscar said,
13 years of age. At some other point, I met Ricardo, who dismissed gender and still have a lot to offer as a human being. I also remember well a trans man, also a friend of mine, who in a self-disclosing speech said, I never describe myself as someone who was born into the wrong body. Because had I been born into an other body, I would not have been me. How profoundly true. At that very instant, I stopped using that rhetoric, the wrong body rhetoric, realizing the implicit lie, the implications that bodies are exchangeable. I also realized the reinforcement of body alienation that is innate to the wrong body expression. Since that revelation, I have come to say some of us are born with bodies that we need to adjust a little in order for them to be good homes for our being. We cannot leave our body's shell, although it may not suit us well. I met with an individual whose body was neither male nor female in the common sense of the words. This person was in great distress, wondering where she, he, or she belonged. My basic profession, that of medicine, had declared this person to be someone with a chromosomal anomaly. Good heavens, these Latin words. And this is really a lifelong sentence of pathology, isn't it? One day, my computer came to divide the word therapist at the end of the sentence. The rapist gleamed at me from the screen, and I thought, the distance is short from assistance to abuse. The given map of two genders map out people of many different gender talents, be they of mental, bodily, or combined character. I have seen many people of one assigned gender move into another and living happily ever after. But I've also seen that the other gender can be as assigned as the first one and as trapping. Nature is immensely complex. Cultures are still primitive and lack the capacity to embrace this complexity. Thus, people are forced into culturally designed narrow spaces where they are expected to find their true gendered belongings. For that to really happen, we need to widen our concepts of gender, our concepts of no gender, and certainly also some concepts that will still be waiting there to be expressed and then included. There is thus far no comprehensive map of all gender topographies, but they are in the weave with a number of threads from the chaotic encounter of nature and nurture. I'll show you some more slides. Let's move to the gender amusement park. This is from Copenhagen. Now, what do we want when we go to the amusement park? We want to win the prize on the top shelf, don't we? Yes, and what have you got there? Ah, a pink teddy. Ah, and a blue teddy. And if you take the blue away, there is but one left. That's not much, is it? No. So we put up the blue, we have to need a purple, we need a yellow, we need, yes! And we need a crocodile for those who do not like teddies. Right? Yeah. So, and what we all want to happen is this. There is someone for everybody. I love that. So, and with this in mind, with the option of the top shelf options, with there were seven thus far. If you have another, please give it to me, then there will be eight. And we shall sure find a color for it. So, now, here is the by, the between, and the beyond. I'm going to talk about polarities and polarizations. Not long ago, I met a person whose voice was fair as a woman's, whose chin was free of beards, whose chest resembled that of a female, and whose pronoun of choice was he. He was the father of two children, had been living with their mother for some years, but left her for a gay life. In gay bars, however, no one took any interest in him. He was seen as a woman. This person chose me to assist him because, at the time, I was a well-known bi-gendered person in Norway. Now I call myself 100% unspecified trans. Anyway, he said, I belong nowhere in the fields of sex and gender. Can you help me find out who I am? A man, a woman, or what? And mind you, he continued, I never took any hormones. My breasts are natural, and I must admit, delightfully sensitive. He said, yes. In this presentation, I shall address some bis, a few of the many that I have met with. My bis of today are bipolar, bisexual, bigender, bicycle, and biology. Now, bisexuality can constitute a fulfilling space between the poles of homo and heterosexuality. Bisexuality is not something by the way or in between. It's rather a third focus, a third pole of sexuality. Bigender is a fulfilling space between male and female genders. It is a space that renders a third pole, not just something on the way, but an entity in its own right. The faces of bigender are diverse, ranging from those who appear constantly androgynous to those who undulate from one gender expression to the other, like I do, for instance. Now, bicycle is a connected and fulfilling polarity of two wheels that bring us forwards when we add some power to it. And forward is where we like to go, isn't it? Biology is not based on bias, but still met with polarizations when man-made constructions are viewed as opposed to biology. To me, that is strange, since I see biology as the sum of interacting and mutually fulfilling systems that sustain all that is living. Isn't human culture but a project of human biology? And I must ask myself, what then is not biology? The answer is, all which does not sustain life. Imagine our planet Earth floating through space. Can you see the white areas that we call the poles? I guess you can. Our home in the universe is bipolar, and at the same time, most fruitfully connected as a life-sustaining entity. If you place yourself face to face with someone, and both of you lifted your arms and let the inner faces of your hands meet, you might sense a connection and a space between. A space that at any time can give rise to tension or to embrace. Polarity is connectedness, space, tension, and possible embrace. Planet Earth has a lot between the poles. In this space, there is tension and diversity. Any point between the poles can be conceived as a third focus, if you so wish. Pole number three. It is space and many possible focuses between poles that renders connectedness, meaning, and fulfillment. The planet Earth is not polarized. We are not living on Venus or Mars. We are living here, on a bipolar, not polarized Earth. We can imagine the poles of our planets pulled apart into disconnectedness. Such polarization renders all in between in the void. Life cannot be sustained. Man-made construction have driven fruitful polarities into polarizations. We have done so to both sexuality, to gender, and this is profoundly primitive and harmful. As I see it, biology, often named nature, represents a fulfilling complexity rich in polarities. Cultures are still very, very primitive. But they are, at the same time, at their best, cultures can contribute to sustain all that which is living. In worst cases, cultures are counter-biological. Think of a house of mirrors. They're often found in amusement parks. You can get yourself mirrored as tall, thin, wide, small, whatever. Mirrors can change the color and complexities of your skin. They can minimize that what you dislike and enhance your qualities. Imagine a house of mirrors with an advanced mirror technology capable of reflecting the best of human qualities. Can you see that? Think that you enter this particular house, that you place yourself in front of a mirror only to experience that no image was reflected. You could but see the person who came in behind you. In a state of fear and panic, you might run to another mirror and yet to another, and still no image of quality was reflected. The man-made constructions of advanced mirroring had absolutely no reflection of you. You might get an overwhelming sense of disconnectedness, like in a void. Between polarized views of gender and sexuality, lots of individuals have been without positive cultural mirroring. They all became parts of the void. Bisexuals were not seen as a third pole of focus, but as a fearful, undecisive group on a stretch line between hetero and lesbian gay. Bigendered, to the extent that we have been reflected at all, have been seen as an ambivalent group of individuals in a pathologized space between an either and an or. Pathology and undecisiveness are distorted reflections in the mirror. They will still be excluded from a house of mirrors that should reflect the best of human qualities. What a loss. Human cultures need profoundly cultivation in order to no longer be loaded with counter-biological systems. One counter-biological system is that of the gender binary, which has polarized the gender majorities into states of disconnectedness and left the minorities in the void. I met many children of variant sexual or gender talents, and likewise babies with unusual genitals of intersexed or hermaphroditic qualities. They need cultural systems apt to sustain their special capacities for living. But thus far, that has not been true in most cultures, unfortunately. The offers are disorder of mind, disorder of chromosomes, disorder of body. Words like that are not what these kids need to feel welcome. Can we see life itself in general, and gender is in particular, as an amusement park, as I saw it, where we all could have access to the first prize at their own informed choice? Today, there are but two teddies on the top shelf. We need many more in order to produce a sustaining environment for unusually gendered people. We need to qualify all options of focuses in spaces between polarities. In addition, we must go beyond that which can be seen as polarities of two. Can you see yourself in a group of six? where all are known to the others. Think that you raise your arms and let the palms of your hands meet. Can you feel the connectedness, the tension, the spaces, and the possible embraces? I would think so. I would also think it possible to see creative fulfillment in this space of six individual poles. Likewise, we can see that embraces and attachment could have a number of faces and facets. I know of seven genders, the female ones, the male ones, the intersex ones, the transgenders, the gender dismissers, the highly personal genders, and the unicorns. All these can interact emotionally and sexually. They can love, and they can be loved, and they can be met in a space near you. I have been as privileged as to hear enough of their and other people's stories to realize human potentials for polysexuality and polyattraction. There seems to be no limits. We are beyond bi, but not beyond polarity. Connectedness, space, and embrace are as present as ever. When I asked him with a fair voice, the breasts, and the fatherhood, if he would like to be perceived and qualified as a third or fourth gendered quality, he answered, I think that would feel like home. Well, I'm not through yet. Some years ago, we went to the Caribbean. And with a lot of gay guys, because one of the gay guys, he was 50 years of age in those days. And we were sleeping in this hotel with paper walls. Have you been to such a hotel? There are many things you don't feel like doing, you know. Yes. Exactly. So, but nevertheless, in the middle of the night, some of the guys were having such a beautiful time in the neighboring room. So this inspired me to write a poem, a story called The Shameless Cocks. We had all been out, we had food and drink, hardly more than we should, at least so I think. We struck bed by 10, as did all around, we fell sound asleep, were for dreamland bound. The sky was dark, the night still on, the sounds and lights had all just gone. Still I woke and rose and caught my pen to describe this night, so Caribbean. It was silent and damp, stuffed with tropical heat. Some mosquitoes were on to my naked feet. In the distant faint was a sound of sea. What rest I could hear were the breath sounds of me. Now, what time did I have? About 2 o'clock. Through the air filled with silence came a sound like a shock. In a night made of velvet, from some nameless flock rose the fertile cry of a shameless cock. And as time went by, he was joined by one. Close to three, there were four, and a cock show was on. And as everyone else had a partner's tight, those shameless cocks stirred the velvet night. Was it right? Was it wrong? No, that I cannot tell. But that cock made sound, this awaking bell, for at sleep she go out, on like a soothing song. Those tameless cocks, they cried all night long. Maybe that is the way of the southern seas, to have some who disturb and the rest at ease. For as birds, iguanas, and land crabs hide, those shameless cocks set all pride aside. And when humankind do for sameness strive, the shameless cocks, they will not abide. They live and they act by their innermost drives. Thus the shameless cocks live such beautiful lives. Thank you.
I think an event that started with back rubs, we really are on path. We've had shameless cocks now. This is fantastic. We have, I guess, about 10, 15 minutes for a question and discussion period. So there is there a mic going around? So you would ask folks to sort of come up to the mic or wave your hand to get it passed to you. Well, I'm going to take the privilege of the first question then. I would love to hear you talk a little bit more about the counterbiological. And in particular, I'm not interested in the old essentialist constructionist debate, but I'd like to hear you talk a little bit about how you're thinking about sort of the language of the biological to sort of map the sort of wild diversity of genders that actually exist.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's very hard to describe that in other ways than in metaphors. Okay. That's why I've used this all the stones metaphor that we have. It's so easy for us, for our minds, our perception, to divide things in two. To make either or divisions, like black and white, heaven and hell, woman and men and women. And sometimes, of course, that is useful, but when we are to address nature, I just find that very, very primitive and simplistic. I don't think I can put it in other way. There is another metaphor that I love to use because I'm a doctor, and I'm a family doctor, and I take blood from my patients. And if you consider this part of your body, it's not big. It's so extremely different from person to person. And I know when some of my patients come into the room, I'm in trouble if I need blood from them, because it's very hard to find blood. And then the other comes around, and it's no problem at all. Some is this side, you know. So for me, it is human being is very diverse. Mm-hmm. And we are diverse of mind and body in all ways. And it's kind of being a little humble, I think. Mm-hmm. Addressing the multiplicity of human nature. Mm-hmm. And we need cultures that can embrace that.
Did I understand you to say that you identified at least seven genders?
Yeah.
I couldn't understand the last four. Could you repeat those for me?
Yeah, the last one is the last one I got to know about. I must admit, I never met any of those. But they are, as described to me, people with male somatic bodies who wants to take the testicles away in order to have an adjusted body that's good for them to live in. So, and I choose to call that a gender too. My way of breaking the bi-gender thinking is to introduce a lot of gender. So at some point, maybe we'll skip gender. I don't know. But as of today, I just take in the genders that present themselves to me.
Could you repeat those seven again?
It's the female genders. You know, females are not totally similar. They are quite different. You know? And it's the male genders. It's the intersex genders. It's the trans genders. It's the gender dismissives. Is the personal genders, like Oscar. He did it his own way, you know? And then the eunuch genders, then you have seven.
I thought you said unicorn. Because that's so my gender.
Yeah.
You know,
I was like, oh, I'll take that in as number eight. the unicorn.
On the question of gender identities, I work for Global Action for Trans Equality, and I had the privilege of traveling quite a bit in the last couple of years. And one thing that I found very interesting to see, especially in Asian Pacific cultures, was that there's a very distinct difference between a cultural category and an identity. And in a lot of, in some cultures, identity is not a very well-known concept because it's a very individual concept. And these cultures just don't deal in individual concepts very much. So, especially in talking to some people from India, they insisted that hijra, what we would call identities, are not identities, but are cultural categories. And I just wanted to throw that in because I thought that that gives them another dimension to the whole concept of gender. I don't know how to relate this to a question, but I just wanted to bring in that experience.
You want me to reflect a little upon it?
The idea that somebody has a gendered identity,
yeah,
was fairly alien to some people I spoke with, because for them a certain gendered expression was part of their cultural group. Yeah. It wasn't part of who I am. It was more part of who do I belong to.
Yeah. Because you know, my wife and I. You can see that we are married because we use the same blouse. We have been, of course, working a lot with gender and gender identity, and gender identity is not our prime word. Our prime word is gender belonging. And because the gender belonging has both the aspect, the inner aspect, who you feel like, what you feel like, but also the mirroring. So to belong is to be perceived by others the same way as you perceive yourself. And that belonging is positive if that which is being perceived is giving a positive value. So that's what I talk about when I talk about a mirror house that gives positive value but to two genders and the rest of us in the void. So we have no belonging. And to me, belonging is far more important and far more related than identity. I never saw my own identity. I've been looking with magnifying glasses for it, but it's very hard to see.
In thinking about issues of difference and this idea of differently, I was wondering where you place, how do you conceptualize like the issue where a desire for difference turns into, or a desiring of someone else's difference turns into an exoticization and orientalism, these sorts of issues where it sort of magnifies difference, yeah, through desire. What do you do with that?
I don't know. What do you do? What do you do with it? I talk to so many people in my consultation room, or my assistance room, as I prefer to call it, and it's sometimes people are sort of out there, and I will always ask, how do you feel like being out there? How is it for you to be out there? If they say that I'm happy out there, put no question mark to happiness that others earn, however strange it seems to be, because there always is a lot to learn and even more to see. So sometimes I have to learn from my clients. And I don't know everything, I don't understand everything, but I can listen to anything. So I don't know if this is answering your question.
I mean more the person who magnifies someone else's difference and desires that magnification. In a sort of an attraction to the exotic, such that it
in a kind of wishful thinking that I would wish you were more than exotic. That
I guess I'm just talking about how do we conceptualize with I'm thinking of it historically,
yeah,
attractions to difference and what that meant when it became obviously it had some, you know, has some really pernicious effects, where I'm not sure if I know how to conceptualize the question, but.
Any of you,
do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, I'm thinking about like Venus Hottentot, you know, and the recent like feeding of a person's body to themselves who was black, and it was about female genital mutilation, quote unquote, that happened. Does anyone know what country that was?
Sweden.
And the long legacy of like desire and exoticizing black and brown bodies, that through a lens of gendering that body. So that's what I was thinking about, like, how do we guard against, think critically about, and resist exoticizing people and, you know, trying to take away people's agency. I don't know. That's not really, that's a reinterpretation, but that's just what it made me think about.
Yeah. I think that I don't think that desiring difference is necessarily to exoticize it. Right. It can be.
No.
I know one of the things that actually pushed me originally to transition was that I had to notice that over the years I had been transitioning and then stopped for about 10 years. And at the end of that time, realized I needed to start again because a number of very close transsexual friends had come to occupy a psychic space for me that I began to realize was no longer about them, that I was asking them to bear my difference for me in a way that I could not live with and say that what I was feeling for them was love. And I wanted to be able to do that, so I had to take that responsibility for myself. I'm not sure I would say that's an exoticization.
No.
It's more like what you were talking about is a displacement. And that's one. For me, that required an ethical response. But I'm also thinking about other forms of desiring difference that may be ways of, I don't know, something like protecting yourself against neoliberal fantasies, like the ones that Samuel Delaney talks about so eloquently in Times Square Red, Times Square Blue, where he talks about how important it is to maintain the capacity to desire people across class lines. His description of his experience does not sound to me like an exoticization of class in a way that is damaging to anyone. It does sound to me like an awareness of the erotic charge that class difference has and gets put into play in a way that produces benefits for many people involved. So I think that what I'm trying to say is that, yes, there are ethics involved in desiring across any form of difference, but if your alternative is only to love what's like you, we're all really screwed.
I'm just told our time. If there's another hand, we could have time for one last comment or question. I know we're about to move into a roundtable with some prepared remarks. Then we'll have time to talk amongst all the panelists. So in fact, I bet we're going to come back to some of these questions about the relationality of gender and what it means to desire across. I have a hunch that will be back on the table in some sort of way, and the unicorns as well.
Yes.
But please join with me in thanking our keynote speaker once again.